democracy, immigration, for example. Anti-Semitism has become an incredibly potent tool to dismantle what remains of U.S. democracy. And we see far-right organizations in Europe which have drawn inspiration. Of course, there's a lot of overlap between these groups. There is a kind of right-wing international. But I think what we also have to emphasize is that there is a deep attraction on the part of far-right leaders and movements to Israel as a state, because Israel is an ethno-national state based on racial exclusion, based on policies of oppression, of dispossession, of apartheid. And for that reason, Israel has a strong appeal to these right-wing organizations, right, and leaders who love deportations, who love building walls. Israel is seen as a kind of model.
Well, Adam Schatz, we thank you so much for being with us. U.S. editor of the London Review of Books. We'll link to your piece, your latest one, The World Since October 7th. And we're going to have you back to talk about your book, The Rebel's Clinic, The Revolutionary Lives of Franz Fanon. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music. Bon ton roulet.
Okay, let's go now, yeah.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from Metropolitan Family Services Cash Oregon, committed to improving the financial health of low to moderate income families and individuals by providing free tax preparation services. Volunteers are currently needed to support this program. All training is provided and no tax experience is necessary. More info on volunteering at cashoregon.org.
This is Keeping It Real. Our guests today are Tony Noscio Johnson and Rachel Cushman of the Chinook Indian Nation. They've had big victories in the past few months, but they're still agitating to regain the federal recognition that was revoked by former President George W. Bush. But first, I am asking you right now, if you have resources and you're looking for a proactive, constructive place to invest them where every penny stays in the local community, this is KBOO's Spring Membership Drive. You can make a contribution at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number. 44321, or you can go to our website at kboo.fm, or on the app, you can tap the red button at the top that says donate. Or you can send us a contribution in a physical envelope to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And again, thanks for being here, my friends. Noscio is the chairman of the Chinook Indian Nation. Rachel is the secretary treasurer of the Chinook Nation. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
One of the most difficult things to cover as a journalist is Native American communities and cultures. So at the beginning of this interview, I want to say, if you need to correct me, please do it. Just do it directly. And I appreciate you for taking the time to do that. But can we start out by defining terms right now? It might seem obvious to some people, but there's a Chinook Winds Casino, but it's not operated by the Chinook Nation. So what does the word Chinook mean, and what does it mean to be Chinook?
So, to say it, Chinookan speaking people, were the indigenous folks from the mouth of the Columbia River up to the Dalles, Oregon. With that said, that is an expansion from the original place where that word existed on the North Shore at the mouth of the Columbia River. It has come to, as you know, Lisa, be used for so many things, right? Our Chinook salmon. The Chinook wind, you know, is its own particular type of wind. The bottom line, though, Chinook, the word means basically at our neighbors. And it's a word that was placed on us, probably collaboratively with our Suwamish neighbors, our Lower Chehalis neighbors. So in a sense, that's a word you could say that they referred to us as. We had our own word for ourselves broadly, and also a word for ourselves based on the individual places that we're from.
And going off of that, so what does it mean to be Chinook? So when we're talking about ourselves, we're talking about the Chinook Indian Nation. We're the five westernmost Chinookan-speaking tribes at the mouth of Iga'imuth, the Columbia River, and adjoining sea coasts. We're the Clatsop and Kathlamet of present-day Oregon, the Wakayakum, Willapaw, and Lower Chinook of what is now Washington State. And for each Chinook person, it's different, you know? It's based on your family. But ultimately, it's what it means to be Chinook for me is the place that I call home at the mouth of the Columbia River, our language, our protocols, so our teachings that are passed down from generation to generation. And it means being strong.
I want to ask you about your governance structure later in the hour, but I know this is a big question, but somehow in my experience living in Oregon, there's a special regard that white people have for the Lewis and Clark Expedition, as it's called. But people don't know anything about the Chinook Nation. It's almost as if you guys are invisible, but you're not. What is the history of the Chinook Nation? And if you have the time, how do you view Lewis and Clark?
That's an awfully big question. Well, let me just say, and Rachel, I'll look forward to hearing you riff on this one as well. What we aren't is, or shouldn't be, is defined by that Lewis and Clark expedition. To be clear, that was a part of our history. But also to be clear, our history has a time depth of 10,000 years. You know, folks talk about it. Well, there's a term in Native country, especially in the Pacific Northwest. People talk about from time immemorial. Well, my argument would be we don't have such a thing, because in our reality, we have the teaching that talks about the time when it was just animals that went around on our land here like human beings. And we know about the moment in time when things were prepared for and transition happened for human beings to become the human beings on our place. And we know how that happened in all the corners of our land. We know about the details of those moments, the characters, Eat Olipus is coyote. You know, this epic journey that he made from our territory on our Clatsop lands up to the Columbia River and then up the Columbia River. You know, that was putting everything in place for us. And if you really want to talk about, you know, what's our history, who we are, well, we're a product of that and the teachings that come from it. And so when Rachel said earlier, our protocols, our taboos, you know, all of that is defined in these stories and teachings that we've inherited. And so for us, it's our great fortune. I should also say, you know, we had two moments in time where we were in treaty negotiations with the United States. In both cases, we said, no, we will not leave our home. We're staying with the bones of our ancestors. And so Chinook is not federally recognized today because of that decision. And I hope we would make that decision 100 times over, because by not leaving our place, we maintained a connection to our land that is incredibly important. You know, sovereignty comes from a connection to your land and ancestors, and no one can say that the Chinook Indian Nation is not a sovereign nation.
It's so strange to see these different systems that don't make sense, the political systems in our culture. I just read a great essay in Oregon Humanities Magazine. It was written by Rachel. I was just talking with her about it. One of the best essays I've ever read on these issues. It's on how the tribal recognition system is broken. And I think the Bush administration, if it's true, they cited a lack of documentation between the 1850s and 1920s as a reason for the revocation. Can you talk about how this system, the federal recognition system, is supposed to work? And how is it broken?
Yeah, I can go there. So Tony just referenced our treaty negotiations, right? And we refused to leave. And so that set us up in the system that we are in today. So we stayed. And in every sense of the word, we were federally acknowledged, meaning that we had relationships with the U.S. government. You know, our ancestors went to boarding schools. Three generations of my family went to Indian boarding schools. Only Indians went to boarding schools. You know, we got allotments on reservations. There was several congressional and Supreme Court cases that we are referenced in, that we are named as a nation. And it's a really complicated history. Like, I could spend this whole time just talking about the complicated nature of Chinook's relationship with the U.S. government. You know, we'll get into this a little bit later, but our ancestors in the 1890s filed a lawsuit against the federal government for illegally taking our lands. That litigation ended up moving to legislation that they acknowledged they took our lands illegally and paid annuity payments to our community. Our community, before the Indian Reorganization Act of the 1930s, we created our first constitution as the Chinook Indian Nation, or the five most Western Chinook speaking tribes. In the 1920s, we filed many lawsuits against the federal government. And in all sense and purposes, we were federally recognized until the 1960s, when the Department of the Interior decided to cut services to landless tribes. And the only reason why we're named as a landless tribe is because those treaties, the 1851 treaties, went to the Senate, who is the body responsible for ratifying treaties, and tabled them indefinitely, which this is all really complicated. But ultimately, with them taking our land without those treaties being ratified, this is unceded land, and they illegally took it. Fast forward, the 1970s, late 1970s, they created the Office of Federal Acknowledgement, which actually was the Branch of Research and Acknowledgement, which is now the modern day Office of Federal Acknowledgement. We immediately put in an application. We were in that process for 21 years. And at the end of the Clinton administration, or during the Clinton administration, the then Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs, Kevin Gover, an Indian law expert in good standing, said, hey, Chinook's not getting a fair shake of this. They've been in this process for a long time. So he sent it out for external review by other Indian law experts. They found that we met all of the requirements in that process to be recognized and recognized us. And I'm sure Tony will go in, you know, to this more in detail as well. His dad was one of the delegation leaders of the Chinook Indian Nation who went to D.C. to sign those papers. Fast forward 18 months later, a new administration, the Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs had no experience in Indian law. The only qualification was that he was an Indian and an engineer from Oklahoma. And he said that Indian law expert had read the evidence wrong. And that's why we're not recognized today. So it's a broken system, and politics got in the way.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. Our guests today are Noscio Johnson and Rachel Cushman of the Chinook Indian Nation. They've had big victories in the past few months, but they're still agitating to regain the federal recognition that was revoked by former President George W. Bush. And we're going to talk about that again in about 1 minute. And I have to say, it is the spring membership drive. You can join us as a member by making a contribution to support this programming. We need your financial support to hold this space for the locally produced news, public affairs, and music that links our communities together. You can invest your hard-earned resources at kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can go to our website at kbu.fm or on the app. You can tap the red button at the top that says donate, or you can send us a contribution in a physical envelope to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Back to Nostio and Rachel, this issue of the system and how it's broken. You guys have been through a lot of stuff in the past couple of years. It's like a popcorn popper of things that you've been working on and the victories. So I want to dig into that for a minute. I mean, you recently again were denied an opportunity to regain federal recognition. What happened there?
So forgive me. I'm going to step us back just for a moment, if you'll indulge it. You know, it was really a great description that Rachel provided of the system, you know, the Office of Federal Acknowledgement system that we participated in. A couple of quick asides. You know, in the 1950s, the Western Oregon Termination Act terminated every tribe in Western Oregon. At the same time, and in the precursor to that, there were conversations in the village where I live and work, Bay Center, Washington, about the very same thing, termination of our tribe. In the end, it didn't happen in Western Washington. It did happen in Western Oregon, and it was devastating. Fast forward to the 1970s, the tribes that had been terminated in Western Oregon began to, I would say, pull things together and mount the fight to fix that, you know, egregious thing that happened. The first of those tribes to be restored was Siletz. There are, you know, a number since then through the 70s and 80s. What's important for me to say, or for us to say on behalf of Chinook, is that two of our five tribes were terminated in the Western Oregon Termination Act. Three were named. So the Chinook was named erroneously because that is a north shore of the Columbia River tribe, but also and legitimately, our Clatsop and Kathlamet tribes were named and terminated in that act. Well, we watched our neighbors go through the process of congressional recognition. That is, they were restored by Congress over the course of those decades. Chinook believed the United States when it said that they had created a new, fair, and timely process to recognize tribes. In hindsight, we really should have pursued congressional recognition back then in the 70s and 80s. Instead, as Rachel said, we bought into and participated in a system that was not fair or timely. And the reality is we were recognized under that system. It took a good long time to do it, 21 years to get recognized, 23 to have it reversed, because again, 18 months after it was announced in the Federal Register and an apology was made by the United States, that recognition was rescinded. You know, I wanted to say something. Rachel referenced my dad being amongst the delegation that was there. He was chairman at the time. Well, the United States in January of 2001 brought us back to D.C., apologized profusely for the treatment that the Chinook Indian Nation community has received, and promised us that the building that they were in that moment, the main interior offices, you know, Bureau of Indian Affairs in D.C., they said, this will be your home in Washington from this day forward forever. and it lasted all of 18 months. So in the end, you know, we say the system's broken, but a cynical person would say the system is working as intended.
Intended.
Right?
This might sound like such an obvious question, but what is the problem? What's the holdup? Why is this so hard?
You know, unfortunately, recognition is now a political issue. And, you know, it's political in so many ways. But the bottom line is, and by the way, before I say this, our neighboring tribes, our closest neighboring tribes and relatives support Chinook Indian Nation recognition, no matter what the cost. They are supportive of us, including of the current recognition bill that you were referring to. And I think more than saying we didn't get an opportunity to be recognized with that, what I would tell you, Lisa, is we are in the process of working with our electeds, our delegations in Oregon and Washington to get recognition or restored through Congress. The reality is only Congress can restore our two tribes, the Clatsop and Kashlamet, that were terminated. But I'm going to hand this to Rachel and see what she might want to add.
Yeah, I think that you covered that really well. I was going to say that, you know, only an act of Congress can undo an act of Congress. So regardless of whatever recognition pathway we take and achieve, we still need to have an act of Congress to restore those two nations. I want to just let you know there are four pathways to federal acknowledgement.
Okay.
So you asked that earlier on. How does that work? There are four pathways per the 1994 List Act. And the first is, you know, this act of Congress. There's executive orders. So there's executive order tribes. Then there is the Office of Federal Acknowledgement process that we described. It's a long and arduous process. And then the fourth and final is the federal courts. And the federal courts is a contentious one because the courts are like, that's political. We don't want to do that. We are challenging all pathways right now. We are pursuing all pathways to recognition. We just, you know, you said Chinook has been through a lot recently. We have been working really hard. We had a lawsuit against the federal government for withholding our lands claims. I know you wanted to ask about that later. You know, we can go into that. We won that. We'll talk about that in a minute. In 2015, the Office of Federal Acknowledgement was acknowledged by the Obama administration as being broken. And they changed the rules to make it more fair and timely and uniform. So if a tribe had been recognized with a certain set of evidence, that every tribe would also be able to submit that kind of evidence. Because it was really like people weren't being judged on merit. It was very problematic. It was broken. And so they made it more, quote unquote, fair. And in that process, they also created a rule that banned repetitioning. So anybody who'd been harmed by the system couldn't repetition. We filed in our lawsuit claims against that. It was arbitrary and capricious. We won. And just a week ago, the new rule went into effect that allows limited repetition, and we'll be entering that system. But even with that system, we have to get an act of Congress for our two Oregon tribes. So it's complicated, right? And then the third part of our lawsuit is that, you know, we ask the courts to just judge this, to make a decision. We are in the appeal process for that right now. It's gonna be some time before that shakes out. But we are pursuing every pathway. And as Tony said, we are working with delegates to get a bill through Congress.
All right. I need to break in here again and say KBOO has been handing the mic to real people since 1968. This is the spring membership drive. When you invest in this station, the fact is that your money goes right back into programming, not a $500,000 CEO and three-figure staff salaries. The fact is that KBOO's free radio trainings onboard new voices and even professional journalists and DJs. We are the grassrootiest. Make a contribution at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or you can go to our website at kboo.fm, or on the app you can tap the red button at the top that says donate, or you can send us a contribution in a physical envelope to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. This is Keeping It Real. Our guests today are Nostio Johnson and Rachel Cushman of the Chinook Indian Nation, and there's so much going on with you in the past few months. You just talked about the lawsuit. There was also a Republican state senator in Washington tried to float legislation giving you land back at the youth camp. First of all, I'm super curious about, you know, what kind of relationship tribal communities have with Republicans, because a lot of people assume Democrats are the ones who support indigenous communities, but I do not think that's accurate. Can you talk about this issue of the youth camp and the land back? What's going on there? Do you have it yet?
Rachel, do you want to speak to the youth camp briefly, and I'll say something about the broader politics?
Sure. We are still working on that. We are strategizing. So no, we don't have it back yet. The NACEL youth camp is located in the heart of our Lower Chinook territory at the mouth of the Columbia River on the North Shore. The area is very important to us. You know, it was our winter ground, so where a lot of our people on the river, which is really windy and rainy and difficult to live in and weather throughout the winter, we would tuck in behind the mountain there and, you know, winter there. We have been working for a couple of years now on the acquisition. Yes, we have had Republican support in this. We've had support from our neighboring nations, the local community. There was a task force put in place to determine where the camp would go to. Chinook was the unanimous vote. They wanted to help the nation. And this task force is made up of local and state leaders. And that was the direction that they wanted to move towards. And it would be generationally changing for us. It would be an agency where there are facilities already existed for housing, for business, for a number of things. There's a health clinic there, and it would be ultimately a life-changing experience for our community. And yeah, Tony, you want to talk about the broader support?
Yeah, and forgive me, Rachel, it's a little bit unfair for me to hand that one to you because it is a project that I've been busy working on. Rachel, of course, is well informed on it. I would reiterate what Rachel just said, which is having the camp for our community would be generation changing. And, you know, it's hard to overstate how important that would be. When it comes to partisan politics, you know, I mentioned a 10,000 year time depth for our community. You know, we have to operate above partisan politics. You know, where I live here in Pacific County, it has been deeply blue and it is now deeply red. The reality is, you know, we are not able to be the ones that decide how we're represented. You know, we have a large population, but we don't have a large enough population for that. And the reality is, there is, well, I would say both parties have failed us repeatedly. We wrote a letter a day to President Obama and publicized this effort in really profound ways of just pouring our hearts out with the information about our community, why it is we should be recognized, the travesty of having our recognition taken away. and not even an acknowledgement of that effort. You know, the great headache that we have is that we live, you know, we are very rural. We are very poor. Our community, I mean, broadly, not just the Chinook Indian Nation community, you know, Pacific County where I live is one of the poorest counties in the country. And we don't have the voice. I mean, that's so typical, right? The voice of rural and poor folks, and especially poor folks of color, are not heard. You know, I've heard a statement in about Washington politics that says, you can see all the votes you need to be a United States Senator from the top of the Space Needle. Is that true? I don't know. But I think you could say something similar in Oregon, you know, in terms of where the center of power is. And, you know, it makes, no matter how just or real our cause, or no matter how just dramatic the harm is that both Rachel and I could talk about just from our own immediate family experiences, you know, no matter how profound those things are, it is really hard to be heard and to move, you know, state politics, let alone national politics. But with that said, you know, we're not going to give up this fight, right? And this fight is not a partisan political fight. Yes, we can all acknowledge when we have leadership in the states or nationally that is doing outrageous things or is that frankly is idiotic. And though we need everybody to make, you know, to reach Chinook justice. And what I would say is, you know, ChinookJustice.org is a site that we have established where folks can go and sign a petition, show support, sign up to be in the know. You know, really encourage folks to jump onto the links to our social media accounts there. Is this true? I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that Chinook has the largest social media presence of any tribe in the Pacific Northwest. We have worked so hard to make that happen and really encouraging your listeners to jump on, sign the petition, and learn more.
You guys, that's actually how I discovered all the work that you're doing. A couple of years ago, I started seeing your Facebook page. I think you might even have more than one Facebook page. And one of the things I love about your social media is that you always celebrate people's birthdays. Talk about you and talk about your community a little bit.
Well, I'll say thank you. We do have some really cute kids. You know, I've been a part of Chinook's communications team since, I think 2011 is when we really got off the ground with our social media presence. You know, we have at Everyday Chinook on Instagram, where you can see a lot of those birthday photos and just really important moments. We have our Facebook is where we started, though. And really all this happened organically as our community was like, we want to share with people who we are. And so you can see a lot of that. It is really everyday Chinook and people on there doing the things that we do, whether it's, you know, going to an event or just being at home with our kids. We have a really great photographer who's just been taking photos of our community for years now, since, let's say, my son was born in 2013, since 2014 when he was about 1 year old is when she joined us and started taking photos. But, you know, we have roughly 3,000 tribal members, and we try to capture as many folks as possible in these social media platforms. And we are folks who are struggling to exist within our homelands. We are practicing our ancestral teachings and passing those down from generation to generation. So, like, recently, we posted a spring pictures, spring pictures saying welcome to spring, and, you know, showed photos of us processing nettles because that's the time of year it is. And so we are very much rooted in our ancestral teachings, but we're just like everybody else too, you know, and we're just struggling to survive and resisting elimination.
What would you say are some of the big issues that are facing your community right now?
There's quite a few issues. Like Tony said, our region, our rural community is poor. We struggle with a housing crisis. We struggle with a food desert. We struggle with all the issues of Indian country. So, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric around alcoholism and mental health issues as a product of boarding school era, right? Like when you abuse people, they end up with trauma. We're those same people, but we don't have resources to combat those issues or alleviate those issues. We do our best to serve our community, to feed our community, to provide cultural healing opportunities to our community, but it's a struggle. We have many people who are living in bad conditions with no running water, no electricity. You know, there's a real struggle. We also are dealing with the loss of our children. So, you know, there's the Indian Child Welfare Act that was created to prevent Native kids being taken from Native communities. It doesn't apply to Chinook. Luckily, we've in our local community have been able to build a relationship with DHS and DCYF in Oregon and Washington to have somewhat of a voice. But, you know, it's dependent on the judge. It's dependent on the caseworker. And so, you know, we lose kids because families are struggling, right? That's in my own immediate family that I've experienced this. We don't have the resources to help folks who are dealing with housing crises. You know, there's a lot of folks with health issues that we can't support because not all of our tribal citizens qualify for Indian health services. And quite a few people are left without care. It's a crisis. It's a humanitarian crisis is what it is. That's what it's like to be Chinook. There's some of us. I feel very fortunate to be educated, and our community tries to provide educational opportunities through relationships and building agreements with colleges and universities. But, you know, I'm one of the lucky few that has been able to succeed, and I'm using that privilege of my socioeconomic status to help the rest of my community, you know?
And Tony,
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was going to hand it to you because you have your own stuff.
Well, I was just going to say something we're proud of, which is that we have, you know, for a long time, the largest amount of money that we had in one place was money that we had designated for higher education scholarships. And by the way, when I say higher education, this includes VOC. You know, vocational opportunities, any number of things, right? But, you know, we are really proud of that. You know, to add to what Rachel is saying, the difficulty of having all of the historical issues that people are aware of in Native country and having no means of fixing it is unbearable for us, because all of the things, like I said, you imagine or know about from other Native communities are real in our situation. And yet, you know, what I would say is, as an elected leader, one of the worst things about this work is those late night calls, you know, a family in crisis, a person who doesn't have a home, or somebody struggling with suicide, whatever it is. And all we have to offer is our own physical selves, right? The energy that we can muster you know, within our household, or that, you know, like just my physically going to be present with somebody, you know. And it's not to say that we are not continuing to work to, you know, to have resources or to continue to provide more opportunities in terms of staffing and whatever in our community, but we don't have the means at this point of doing the work that we need to do to, you know, help our community even turn the corner towards real healing.
And this is the place where being able to be awarded that land where the youth camp is would make such a huge difference, because actually the youth camp itself has a modest facility, but it's got a lot of parts to it. What is the governance structure of the Chinook Nation?
Well, Rachel mentioned the creation of our first constitution in the 1920s. It also seems important to say that, you know, our hereditary leaders, men and women, are, of course, who negotiated our treaties in the 1850s, but it's their immediate descendants who hired our first attorneys in the 1890s and then ultimately made that constitution in the 1920s, and who rewrote our constitution in 1951. So we have a constitution, the same constitution since 1951, that again, the original rewriters of that constitution were all people of hereditary status that had inherited leadership roles in the community. And, you know, we are governed by that. We have a 9-member tribal council. 3 members per year are up for election. We have 3 officers, a chairman, a vice chairman, and a secretary treasurer. One of those officer positions is up for election each year. And we also then have a committee structure that is really robust. That committee structure is made up of ideally 9-member committees that cover the topics that you would imagine, and frankly, if we were a federally recognized tribe today, would have departments doing the work for. So, natural resources and food sovereignty, cultural committee, right? You name it. You know, these committees are doing the work for the community, you know, for the benefit of our nation. And so that really is the structure. I think we're proud of the way in which our constitutions came to be, and, you know, see that as the way in which we will govern ourselves for a good while going forward.
I also wanted to ask you, what kind of programs and events do you have that you put on for your own community? I know, I mean, I just see the coolest things, but can you talk a little bit about the things that you do together?
Yeah. You know, we just ended our storytelling season. So, you know, Tony, at the very beginning of this conversation, talked about those stories that have been passed down from generation that we know where we come from. Storytelling season, or Econom season, was where our history and civics and culture is passed down in our plank houses in the winter time. Like, you know, so we pass those stories down. We just concluded our storytelling season, our Econom season, with a storytelling gathering. So that just happened this last month. You know, that's one example. We have a very active canoe family. So we're part of the canoe resurgence work that's happening throughout, actually, the Pacific Northwest, the Pacific Ocean communities, indigenous communities, actually all over the place. And we've been engaged in that since the very beginning. So we travel on tribal journeys. We're getting ready to head up to Elwha this summer with our community and participate in the potlatch up there. We have several ceremonies throughout the year that we put on. We have, on the regular cultural wellness classes, workshops, where I'm sure you saw the basket weaving reel that went out there. It was a really cool video of our community getting together and gathering and making baskets together. We try to have as many opportunities throughout the year as possible to be together, to practice our cultural values and life ways. And some of those things, they don't make it on there. Like, some stuff we just don't get the opportunity to get the photo, but it's every day we're trying to. And, Tony mentioned our natural resources and food sovereignty committee work. I serve on that as well as the communications. And there, we have a traditional food program where we have relationships with Washington Fish and Wildlife, with the local hatcheries, with private landholders. We have, we provide opportunities for people to learn to hunt, to gather food for themselves. We provide hundreds of fish a year to our community. We have regular distributions of salmon, steelhead, etc. Sometimes some rockfish, sometimes some halibut that we're feeding our community. And that's regular. Like that's, sometimes that's weekly. And so we do a lot together. And you'll get snippets of that on our social media.
Can we talk? I want to stay on the canoe families for a second. I think a lot of people don't know what that is. And it's just the most incredible network of people and communities. And so when you are participating with your canoe family, that's it's history, it's ecology, and it's also construction, right? I mean, you're building the canoe. Can you just talk about that a little bit more?
No.
Yeah. You wanna take a first stab at it, Tony?
Well, one thing I'll just say briefly, Lisa, is, Chinook has an unbroken canoe culture, and that is something we are very proud of and something that not every community can say. Raised here, I grew up with elders who had, their own canoes as, in their youth, that they ran trap lines in order to pay for their school clothes, right? These are folks that had incredible knowledge of our territory. And, I cannot say how grateful I am that they cared enough to work hard to make sure that that knowledge carried forward and that they shared what it is that they knew. With that said, we do travel annually by canoe. We have our canoes doing work in the community. So Rachel mentioned our salmon ceremony as an example. The canoes have a life there. But when it comes to traveling on canoe journey, that's right. Really what Tribal Journeys is and our canoe family is a group of like-minded folks who are prioritizing, like you said, the marine technology, the knowledge of traveling on the water, and then all of the requirements when we're out. When we arrive at somebody else's beach, there's protocols to the way that we land. There are protocols to the way that we leave their beaches. And frankly, when we arrive at somebody's community, we know they are going to take care of us. This is maintaining very old, pre-contact relationships, but we know they're going to take care of us, but we also have a responsibility to them. And we will take a floor. If they open up a floor, we will sing and dance. We bring our culture to their floor. And this is a really beautiful exchange that happens that is, celebrating old relationships, but is maintaining old relationships, and it's maintaining this living culture and a part of our culture that is so, so important to us. By the way, federal recognition is the key to assuring that, you know, all of what we're talking to you about goes forward, right? All of our federally recognized neighbors have, you know, this incredible gift of resources and staffing and facilities that Chinook just has not been able to have without our federal acknowledgement. So just to bring it back to that, you know, this has to happen. It has to happen because the mouth of the Columbia River needs a federally recognized tribe properly seated here to protect our place, to work to the enhancement of our resources, and of course, for the preservation of the culture that not only is important to us, but that will change the future of the place, right? Had people listened when they first arrived here, this environment and this place would be so different than it is now. But people are finally growing up. America is growing up, I want to believe, is going to grow up to be able to have respect for the 10,000-year knowledge that we have. Sorry, Rachel, go for it.
Yeah, I 100% support everything you just said and totally agree. And Lisa, if you're interested in learning more about our Kanu family and Kanu culture, Tony and I actually co-published a book chapter with John Danke, a friend of ours, in the book called Politics of the Kanu. It's through the University of Manitoba Press. We have a chapter, This is What Makes Us Strong, and it talks about our, you know, our Kanu family, our history with tribal journeys, and why it's so important to all the things that, you know, Tony just mentioned.
Right. I don't want to make everything about the current president of the United States, but how does the emerging authoritarian government impact you? Is it impacting you?
I think that's a really good question. I will say we don't know 100% how it's going to impact us. We can't always rely on previous decisions for our situation. I will say that the last tribe to receive federal acknowledgement through Congress happened during this current president's previous administration in 2019, at the end of his administration. Little Shell was recognized. And so there's that. That's a fact. We also know that he has made a executive order supporting the Lumbee tribe. So there's that. We don't know. And as Tony said before, we have to be above party politics and we have to just keep moving forward. And I know these are challenging times for a lot of reasons, but you know, Chinook has been through a lot for 174 years. We have been through a lot and we are hopeful that we're getting close.
All right. All right. I'm starting to run out of interview, so I want to ask you some summing up questions. What should KBOO listeners, our listening audience, be focusing on right now? Because, I mean, predominantly a lot of white people, we don't always know what's the legitimate thing to be watching when it comes to communities that we care about and that we do want to support. What should we be looking at on these issues of federal recognition and the political situation and how to make a system that works?
You know, one thing I would just add, Lisa, and by the nature of my existence and way of thinking, I'm going to take us back again. But, you know, when I was born, 75% of Oregon's tribes were not federally recognized. That is those that are recognized today. 25% of Washington's were not recognized. And my point really being is Native country is a work in progress at best, right? Do not believe that because it's 2025, everything is right in the way that the United States approaches its native people or who it recognizes or who it doesn't. You know, Chinook has to be recognized for this country to have any moral standing. they have to acknowledge the mistakes made, the land taken, the really horrific things that were put on our ancestors in these boarding schools, and just their lived experience of being relocated, you know, out of the village they were in to another place. Where I live today, really, Chinook people are here because it's a swamp. It's a point of land stuck out on an island, you know, in Willapa Bay. We're here. Yes, there was a traditional village, but all of us are here because we were pushed. You know, there is a description of our place as a refugee camp, and I kind of appreciate that sentiment because in a lot of ways, that's where the Chinook people ended up. So I don't know if I'm perfectly answering your question, but what we need is your listeners to go to ChinookJustice.org to, you know, just, you know, really understand that what we're saying in our social media, when we're asking for an assist and trying to activate people that want to work for Chinook Justice, you know, just please put faith in our knowledge, in our word, in our story, in the fact that there is a right thing to do, and that's recognize the Chinook Nation here at the mouth of the Columbia River. You know, just please, folks, be active, be activated or activatable, right? Get on, sign up to be, you know, in the know for what's happening with Chinook. And there's incredible gratitude on behalf of our community for the folks that have already done that. You know, there's 30 plus thousand signatures on petition to support Chinook recognition. There's 10,000, 11,000 plus followers on these social media sites. You know, we are so fortunate for that. And I will say, Hayamasi, Guafla, right? Hayamasi or Guafla, two ways in our community to say thank you.
And I want to thank you guys again for being on the show. That's it for our show. This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today, Noscio Johnson and Rachel Cushman of the Chinook Indian Nation. Find out more about their work online at ChinookNation.org, but also find out more about how you can be active with them at ChinookJustice.org. Thank you guys again for being with us.
Hayamasi.
Hayamasi.
Excellent. And yeah, one last thing. I'm going to say it again. Keeping It Real only brings on community organizers. And if you've been listening, you already know this is it. This is the time. It's Do Something O'Clock. And you, your family, everyone you love deserves to be connected to a resource that's warm and supportive of diversity, equity, and inclusion, a safe space for immigrants of all kinds, and with a microphone you yourself can pick up and be heard. You can make a contribution at kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321, or you can go to our website at kbu.fm or on the app you can tap the red button at the top that says Donate. Or you can send us a contribution in a physical envelope to KBU Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Special thanks to the entire KBU Community Radio staff for making this all possible. KBU Community Radio needs more volunteers, including on-air and broadcast board operators. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kbu.org. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness.